Welcome to the Lawyers, Guns, and Money podcast.
Hello, dedicated Lawyers, Guns, and Money listeners. My name's Rob Farley, and with me tonight are the front pagers, Scott Lemieux and Eric Loomis, and we are going to talk about the after week two NFC preview of the NFL. So could you guys introduce yourselves?
I'm Scott Lemieux, an instructor of political science at the University of Washington.
And I'm Eric Loomis.
Yeah, all right, fantastic. So I want to start this off with what I'm going to title this podcast with and what I've been talking about as the passion of the Eli. So, Scott, you used to be an actual New York resident. Why don't you start us off with a discussion of what's going on with the football Giants?
Yeah, it's actually a very interesting question about who is the very worst football franchise in New York or in New Jersey. I guess it's clearly the best franchise in New York is the Buffalo Bills. But it's a weird, like nothing that David Gettleman has done has just made any sense. You know, using a, second overall pick on a running back is definitely a win now move. You know, and it's not like Barkley seems to be really good, but the problem with that is that you pretty much are paying market value. So you don't get the cheap 4 years you get from drafting a quarterback, and running backs wear down quickly. So, but you know, if your team is not going to be good for 2 or 3 years, you're basically blowing, second contracts for star running backs are just notoriously horrible investments. I mean, I think Marshawn Lynch is one of the few that's worked, and even that's kind of an outlier in a lot of ways. So so that seems like a win now move, but then he re-signs Eli, and then he drafts a quarterback who he almost certainly could have had with the 17th pick, and uses the 6th pick on him, and then trades Odell Beckham, his best. So he just seems to be, is he trying to develop quarterbacks or not? Are they trying to win now? And so eventually, once it was pretty obvious, and also they have a defense that is just world historically terrible, just has no talent at all. So, obviously this wasn't going to be a winning year. So after 2 weeks, of course, they decide to bench Eli, which I think is the right move. But why was he brought back? I just don't understand. If you're going to take a quarterback 6th overall, let Eli walk. It's a very, very strange thing. But if you're going to keep Eli on the roster, I would have assumed they would have played him at least through week 6, like wait until Tate and Shepard come back, wait until after the game against the Patriots, which they're going to, Brady's going to score 80 points or something. And then bring him in like after the bye week. Like that's what I would have assumed. So if you're going to bring Eli back, I also don't really understand why you're bringing in, and again, I think Tampa is not a great defense. It's pretty winnable. But after that, there's some tough games for the Giants and he doesn't have a lot of surrounding talent. So I'm not really sure about if you're going to bring Eli back. I don't know why he's, so really I'd say nothing about this really makes any sense.
Right. And like, the New England game would make so much sense, right? Because, those two games are the core of Eli Manning's quote unquote Hall of Fame case. Right. And so, even if, Brady crushed him, right? Even if the Patriots crushed him, right? It would still be sort of the moment where, and maybe he'll retire like at halftime of that game or something like that. And right. That'll be how it's done. Right. But I mean, that would seem like the sort of moment that you would want to sort of save Eli for. But yeah, no, it makes no sense. Right. Because Barkley is not going to be good 3 years from now. Maybe he will be, but you're squandering him. I mean, he's really good, right?
Yeah,
but he's going to get hurt.
Right. Yeah, and that's the other thing, too, is that, they're clearly intending to give him a much bigger workload, but you don't want your, star running back taking, 350 touches on a team that's going to go 2-14 or something. I don't know. And Gettleman's just a very old school, that 17th pick he could have used on the quarterback, he used to draft a run stopper, which first of all, they could have just kept Snacks Harrison. But secondly, that's not what you use first round picks for in this NFL. They're actually very similar to the Jets, teams with, young quarterback. Although I think the Jets probably have a better one, but, star running back who's doesn't do you that much good on a bad offense, no defense. And I guess we should mention, apropos our tank discussion, that there are two teams this week who are more than 20-point underdogs. The Jets and the Dolphins. As McGarry said on Twitter, those Jets-Dolphins games are going to be watching two infants play chess. And the fun part is that, like, Adam Gase will, like, desperately want to beat the Dolphins and will have a game plan that would be identical to as if he was throwing the game. Like his entire game plan is basically to make the stats of his quarterbacks look superficially good while scoring no points. Like, it's actually perfect for, like, throwing games. So it'll be very, but, yeah, it's painful.
Loomis, you got any thoughts on Eli's historical position?
Well, I mean, obviously the idea of him in the Hall of Famer is kind of ridiculous. I think that for me, I am so skeptical about Daniel Jones as a functional NFL quarterback that while I suppose the Giants are making the right move, you know, there is nothing about him. I mean, that screams good quarterback except for being tall and white. I mean, at least with Josh Allen, who honestly I may be underrating because he has looked okay these first 2 weeks. Yeah. You know, at least there was the freak athlete. Like, I don't really know what Daniel Jones brought to the table, and neither did anybody else in this draft. Yeah. And I just think the Giants are in for a long period of sucking. And, the only downside of that is all the Giants games I'm forced to watch being here in New England. But I just don't see this as being successful at all.
Yeah, yeah. Speaking of which, I just want to make this point. Like, this last week, I had to watch the aforementioned Patriots-Dolphins game instead of the game I wanted to watch, which it turns out the Titans lost in really pretty depressing fashion anyway. But, like, the Dolphins are terrible. I mean, they're just not good, right? I mean, it was like, you know, it was like a Division I FBS team versus an FCS team. I mean, they just don't belong in the football field with good teams.
And neither have any connection to the Lexington market. I understood why I had to watch the Jets and Bills every week when I was living in New York. But, like, why would they show that game in Kentucky?
Which is in between Indiana and Tennessee, right? I mean, notably.
I have to say that, like, it's ridiculous. Like, the only thing that justifies the $3,000 a month or whatever I send to the cable company is getting Red Zone. Like, that list. So I'm just no longer at the mercy of, like, whatever the idiots in my market decide. You know, and I'm always lucky enough to be able to watch my favorite team, but they're generally the late game. So, yeah, and the early game, it's just for some reason they just love to put, like, the Patriots up against whatever, you know, Division III, you know, NCAA team they're playing. You know. And the Patriots schedule the first 8 weeks, by the way, it's just a fucking joke. Like, they get the Jets twice, the Giants, the fucking Dolphins. Like, it's just like, ugh, God. But anyway, the last thing to say is I do have to acknowledge at this point that blog readers with long memories will realize that, you know, I was a very skeptical of Eli ever even being a decent quarterback. You know, it wasn't really clear why the Giants wanted him over Rivers or Roethlisberger. And he was really, you know, bad his first 2 years. And I have to acknowledge that he turned into in his best years, a somewhat better than average quarterback. And, you know, I do think that, you know, when making a Hall of Fame case, like the fact that, you know, he beat Brady and Belichick twice in Super Bowls. Although, by the way, here's a little, like, white versus black quarterback thing. Like, can somebody explain to me why Eli Manning was the MVP of a Super Bowl in which his team scored 17 points and his defense, you know, held the greatest offense ever to 14. But Russell Wilson was not the MVP of a Super Bowl in which his team scored, well, I know, 7 of that was on the Harvard return, but his team scored 31 points. Like, I don't really, like, it seems to me that, like, Tucker Strahan shouldn't be the MVP of that Super Bowl. But still, like, Manning played well, you know, he did well. And the second Super Bowl, like, Manning was legitimately outstanding. Like, that matters. But that would matter if he was, like, close to being a Hall of Fame quarterback. You know, then I agree that I'd put him over the top. But he was basically, you know, a league average quarterback. And, you know, the durability matters. Like, you know, a league average quarterback who you can count on to play every game has more than average value. You know, like, that there is a lot to be said for, you know, you had Eli. You knew you were not going to have to play your backup for not, you know, that's not a trivial thing. Like, he was a good player. You know, he was a very solid player. And the other thing is that you don't need to put him in the Hall of Fame. Like, the 2007 Super Bowl, like, he's a legend. Like, people will talk about him. And it's like you said, that if he went out and played against the Patriots and lost, you know, 58-0, that's not revenge. Like, the Patriots can never get, like, that's the one thing that Belichick and Brady will never have is that undefeated season that, you know, Eli played a big role in taking away from them. And my understanding is that really bugs Belichick. You know, like, I think that was the worst loss of his tenure. So, you know, I think that, like, you know, I think you have to respect what Eli accomplished. You know, he played every game. He was pretty good. He's not a Hall of Famer and he doesn't need to be. That's the thing is that, you know, that this idea that every player who had big moments needs to be in the Hall of Fame. Like, that was his, you know, that's what will get him remembered. You know, he doesn't need to go to. We don't need to pretend he was a great quarterback to acknowledge that, you know, beating an undefeated team, you know, which I am inclined to think was the greatest team in NFL history. Pretty good, you know, and yeah. He had to come from behind in the fourth quarter to do it. Pretty good, you know. So right. That's the only way to put it.
Well, go ahead, Eric.
The one other thing I would say here about the Hall of Fame issue is that, you know, I mean, there's a lot of talk about this right now, but the NFL Hall of Fame is pretty good about not letting in extremely marginal cases. I mean, I thought Kurt Warner was a little questionable, but Warner's case is much stronger than Eli's in terms. Yeah. It's just he didn't play as many seasons because he was kind of, you know, prematurely seen as a senior quarterback mentor to younger quarterbacks. But clearly, like that's about as marginal as it gets in the world of quarterbacks. And you know, I just in terms of when I think about Eli Manning. You know, probably the best quarterback, arguably, of my lifetime who's not in the NFL Hall of Fame is Ken Anderson. And Ken Anderson is clearly a better quarterback than Eli Manning. It's just that Ken Anderson lost those Super Bowls and Eli won them, which is right. Not really that much about either of them.
Right.
Right.
Well, and the one I would compare, this was going to be my trivia question, right? Who is the other, the other competitor for the worst quarterback ever to win two Super Bowls? And it would be Jim Plunkett. Right. And Plunkett is different than Eli Manning in a lot of ways, right? I mean, he had, you know, a pretty mediocre career in a lot of ways, except for winning those two Super Bowls. But he's not in the Hall of Fame, right? And you know, some people think he should be, but he's not, and he's probably not going to be.
Yeah, and I would actually say Plunkett was not as durable and not as consistent as Eli, but I actually think he was better at his best than Eli was. You know, like, his best regular seasons were actually very good. You know, and I agree with, you know, Warner is different because he was a Hall of Fame caliber quarterback who, you know, the question is whether he had enough years at that level. But I like that kind of, you know, and you know, but certainly, like, if Terrell Davis is a Hall of Famer, then I would say Kurt Warner is. And that's, like, running back is the one position we get, like Jerome Bettis. I mean, right. You know. I like it, and I understand as a Seahawks fan, I have a little, you know, the fact that the lead up to that Super Bowl was 2 weeks of, like, will Jerome Bettis finally win a Super Bowl? Like, who gives a fuck? Like, you know, will this guy who's been a mediocre running back the last seven seasons finally get it? Like, you know, I don't care. But anyway, so there's a little bit, but he's still, you know, I think that's a little bit more. But a quarterback said, actually, Mike Tenier said that, contrary to what I've thought, that he doesn't think Manning is going to get in. Just because there's going to be such a logjam. That's the one thing, is that because the NFL has no veterans committee, like, it's not enough for people to agree that you're a Hall of Famer. You have to be one of their top choices versus the other people on the ballot. And right now, there's so many sort of overqualified Hall of Famers who aren't in that it's actually going to be pretty tough for Eli. You know, he's obviously, nobody's going to vote for him over Brees or Brady or, you know, so I think it actually is going to be pretty tough for him to break through just because there's so many people out there. And he doesn't, you know, there's not a situation like in baseball where you just need like eight random guys who knew Eli back in the day to decide, whoops, yep, Harold Baines, sounds good. Let's throw him in. So I actually think he won't, but I think that's, you know, as we all know, it's very difficult for New York athletes who just never get the recognition that they fully deserve. So it's like, I feel bad for Eli that he'll never get the credit.
Well, pretty obscure family too, right? I mean, it's just really hard to...
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Like, people still talk about his old man, who never won any, you know. So, I mean, I think he's going to be fine. I think we're going to hear plenty about Eli the rest of his career, and he'll be fine without being inducted to Canton.
So, why don't we jump from this and talk about the rest of the NFC East? Lemieux, just to recap here, you had the Eagles, the Cowboys, the Giants, and then the Washington football franchise that we shall not speak its name. What have we learned in the first two from either of you? What have we really learned in these first 2 weeks to sort of throw that off?
The Cowboys have looked a little better, although that's partly an opposition issue, obviously. But, the only concern is that, you know, the Eagles just are really getting banged up already. So that would be my one concern. I mean, it's weird, as I said in the preview, is that the Cowboys have just become this completely stable, well-run organization that, you know, isn't spectacular, but, you know. And they finally have taken play calling away from Garrett, which I think helps a lot. So I think right now, I mean, I don't know if you agree, Eric, I think you'd have to put the Cowboys slightly ahead just because I'm very concerned. And then in Philly, you also have the issue that, I mean, I like Wentz more than Eric does as a quarterback, but, you know, he has been a little brittle and they really don't have anything behind him if he gets hurt. I think that the Cowboys could sort of function without their number one quarterback for a period better than the Eagles can. They have a little bit, you know, so Yeah, so I think they're – I mean, like, I think it's pretty obvious who the best two teams in the division are. It's an easy one. But I would say that the – I would say probably – I think you'd have to bet on the – you know, I think the Eagles at their best and healthy are better than the Cowboys. But I think that you'd have to like the Cowboys to win the division as things look right now.
Yeah, I don't think there's any – yeah, I hate to admit it, but I think that's true. I mean, the Eagles are so beat up. And I mean, they still have a lot of first-round talent, but – you know, and those injuries are pretty rough. And Wentz, you know, I actually think Wentz is fine. I just don't think he's – I think the fact that you saw Nick Foles – the fact that Nick Foles did that well in that offense says a whole lot about that team and probably overrate – probably leads me certainly to believe that the love of Carson Wentz is overrated. It's hard to argue against the Cowboys right now. Having watched the Cowboys for the last, 25 years, I am pretty skeptical of their ability to actually have a whole season that goes without a major hitch, that has relatively little drama, and then go in and march into the playoffs and make it to the NFC Championship game. Look, it's possible someday it's going to happen, but it sure hasn't since Jimmy Johnson left. So I'm kind of wait and see here. But in terms of that division, yeah, and in a lot of ways, we'll get into this later. But the so much of the football landscape right now, outside of about four teams, is so still kind of unknown. You know, who's really going to win the South or the North is actually kind of up in the air too. Who knows where this is going to lead at this point? But yeah, I mean, you got to go with the Cowboys.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Mr. Barry Switzer and his Super Bowl ring would like to have a conversation with you.
Yes, you don't that team from scratch. He did. part of me almost admires Jerry for that. Is that like Jimmy? It's kind of great. It's like Jimmy, this team is so good that literally anybody could win with it, and he was right. that's like don't hire another good coach if you want to make your point. Barry Switzer. You have to admire that.
All right. So let's shift over to the NFC North, which genuinely does have four northerly cities here, right? I mean, I like that. I think it may be our most geographically coherent division in all of football, right? But you've got four cities that are actually pretty close, and all of them are cold in the winter. So, Scott, you had Green Bay, Minnesota, Chicago, and Detroit. And I know we have something to talk about with respect to Trubisky. So what are our thoughts on this division?
Yeah, this has been one of the picks I've had that I would say is looking pretty good so far, even though, the Bears have really been unimpressive despite, grinding. And at the end of that, and it should be said that they got that win over Joe Flacco with a ridiculous rough of the pass of the penalty. And I didn't think that they got the timeout. I don't understand why they tried that field goal. Like, that's also seemed pretty shaky. So they really, got pretty lucky there. They're still a good team. But, I have a radical take for you. And just let me finish. But I think one could argue that trading three draft picks in order to be able to acquire Mitch Trubisky when Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson were still on the board may, in retrospect, not be seen as working out for the Bears. And I don't want to go too far on the limb there, but I might think that after 2 weeks of that, I'd be pretty skeptical. And I know, Eric, you're also...
Yeah, Loomis, how are you going to take that punch in the gut right there?
Yeah, right. Here's the thing I think about Trubisky. It was a terrible trade. I think there's no question about that. I mean, Trubisky was a fine college quarterback, but, one of these players, and of course, there's one of these every year, and they always, are a big white guy who is massively overdrafted. Somebody moves up, and they hardly ever work out. I mean, the Christian Ponders of the world, there's so many of these people every single year. These reaches hardly ever work out. And it's just really quite notable. But I think Trubisky could theoretically be okay if there was decent coaching. And I don't think Matt Nagy is necessarily a horrible coach, at least defensively. I mean, obviously that Chicago defense is the only thing that's going to keep them competitive here. Maybe this is me bringing my bitterness about recent Oregon Ducks history, but Mark Helfrich is a horrible offensive coordinator. He's still, he's basically the guy from the Chip Kelly coaching tree who has built an entire career off of the fact that he was the offensive coordinator under this, kind of genius, one idea is all, but nonetheless genius offensive mind. you know, he blew up the Oregon program. He was unable to develop a quarterback after Mariota at all, like even a marginally functional college quarterback. He gets fired after, you know, after taking 2 years to turn the Oregon program into a 4-8 team, and he instantly lands on his feet as the offensive coordinator of the Bears. And there's no good reason for this, and he's been terrible with the Bears. And I just don't see Trubisky succeeding, yeah, or really anybody else under Nagy and Helfrich. And moreover, to me, I really have come to believe over the last several years, and we'll get to some of these guys later, but that ultimately, the coaching in the NFL is really the determinant factor for a lot of these quarterbacks. Yeah, some of these quarterbacks might be bad under any circumstances, but the coaching overall and the overall style of management, team management in the NFL is so retrograde that you know these retreads coming over and over and over again, simply are going to continue to fail because they're bad at their jobs, yet they keep getting rehired. To me, the real transformational factor in that was watching Jared Goff go from arguably having one of the single worst seasons in NFL history as a rookie under Jeff Fisher to immediately being an awesome quarterback under McVay. And it's not really that much about Jared Goff. It's about the coaching. And I think that so Trubisky and the Bears are just doomed until they have some kind of better offensive coaching. And it may ruin Trubisky in the way that it's ruined Mariota, for that matter. So I think that coaching is a huge issue here. And I can't see the Bears really seriously competing so long as you have an offensive coordinator of Mark Helfrich and a quarterback is Mitch Trubisky. I just think, you know, unless they can win every game 10-3.
Yeah, and I think it's the one idea thing, because actually last year proved that, you know, Trubisky could be a sort of functional quarterback. Like, I think a lot of people, including me, thought it was smoke and mirrors. But the real, you know, that's, you know, clearly Nagy was, you know, using what he learned from Andy Reid, you know, and they had that. But the problem is, it's really about, you know, can you adapt? You know, and so I think, like, I have confidence that Sean McVay will be able to figure out how people have reacted to him. You know, he didn't do that in the Super Bowl, but I'm pretty sure he'll do that. I believe in that. Whereas, yeah, I'm really not, you know, again, there's no reason to have confidence in the OC. You know, and again, Andy Reid has proven again and again that, you know, he can make these adjustments, but the people in his coaching tree can't, you know, not, it's not necessarily true. So I think that's, you know, it is going to be a really big problem that, you know, I just, you know, this is really the year where we're going to see if they can, you know, now that, you know, people have had a month, you know, the off season look at tape of Trubisky, can they figure out a second way? And it really doesn't look like it. And it's also weird who gets the reputation. You know, I look at, you know, like Greg Roman, who was doing such a good job with the Ravens this year. He did really well with Kaepernick in San Francisco. He did really well with Tyrod Taylor in Buffalo. And he doesn't have the reputation of being this, you know, like, it got very little attention when Baltimore hired him. So it's really weird how you, on the one hand, get the Adam Gazes, who get treated as geniuses, although they never accomplish anything if they don't have an established MVP working with them. And other guys just seem to do a good job. And, you know, it's very weird how that works. But, yeah, I don't really understand why Chicago hired him. I don't, you know, it's just, it's all very, you know, it's pretty strange, you know, what's going on. And I guess, yeah, and then speaking of second acts, there's also Chip in UCLA this year.
Oh, we speak not of it.
Yes. And so what about the rest of the, you know, I mean, I would say that the only thing I would say is that, although it's working out in terms of record, I wouldn't say that Rodgers looks 100% back. And I think you need some time for that offense to develop. But I expected him to more or less come out of the gate and have, you know, 90% of a peak Aaron Rodgers year. And I would say, like, they look really good defensively. But that offense has actually sputtered at times. So that's kind of an interesting, you know, and the Vikings, again, the Vikings seem like a good team with, you know, and Kirk Cousins is sort of the example of good coordinating can only go so far. It's sort of the end of it that, you know, that, you know, like under the right coaching and infrastructure, he looks okay, but he's just the guy who's going to throw that terrible pick at the end of a, you know, so, you know, I think that, like, I like a lot about the Vikings, but, you know, it's still, even if Rodgers is like 70% of what he once was, I'm taking Rodgers over Cousins. I don't know about you, but yeah, that's pretty tough.
Yeah, well, you know, I was watching that opening Thursday night game between the Packers and Bears, and Collinsworth kept talking about how the problem with these sputtering offenses with the quarterbacks hadn't played in the preseason. And yet, you know, all these other and that seemed like a theoretically compelling narrative Thursday night, and then Sunday happened, and all these quarterbacks went ballistic in their opening games.
Right.
I don't think it has anything to do with it. I mean, I think that I think the Packers' offense is not that good, but you know, that's a division that's a little tough to call because I think you're right about Cousins. Magri had a really good piece today. You know, of course, he's a Vikings fan about.
Right.
But Cousins is just awful. I mean, you know, he'll put up some stats and he'll keep you in some games, but. You know, he is what he is, and what he is a guy who's going to go 7-9. And it's not going to be better than that. So I don't know. And then the Lions, it's hard to believe the Lions, but I don't know. They haven't lost yet. It's pretty good for them.
They're not bad. The thing is that, like, I don't see them in the playoffs. But the one problem for the other North teams is that they're definitely better than the bottom end of the other two divisions, especially in the East. That, you know, they're not a, you know, I'm not super confident Patricia's a coach, but Stafford is a credible, like Stafford would improve the Vikings or Bears. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Galladay is a very good receiver. Their running game seems a little bit better. You know, their defense isn't good, but not off. You know, it's not like that's not a team that you could just sleep, you know, that's not a Dolphins or Giants or, you know, like that's not a team you could just sleepwalk through, you know, that they're a team that has some talent. And some recent history of winning. So, like, I don't think they're as good as the other teams, but that's, you know, you could certainly see them beating any of those teams, including the Packers if Rodgers is not dead. So I think that that's where it's, like, it's very hard to see a wild card coming out of this division, and it's really going to, you know, leave teams without a lot of margin for error, that not having those sort of two gimmies. You know, it was basically the Patriots just start out 8-0. But, you know, having said that, it's easy to say, but, you know, as you point out, you know, you could use the preseason as an excuse, but somehow the Patriots and Chiefs start week one humming as well as ever. You know, so, you know, it's amazing how well coached teams, you know, don't, you know, the fact that their top players don't play a lot in the preseason doesn't seem to affect them. So I think that it's sometimes an excuse as much as anything.
All right, so let's bump down to a division where I think that injuries are sort of going to wreak a little bit of havoc. So we have here, Scott, you had the Saints, the Falcons, the Panthers, and then the Bucks. Now, of course, we have the Drew Brees injury, which I think is keeping him out. Like, is it to week six or is it for 6 weeks? I can't remember.
6 weeks, I think, is my understanding.
And then I think Cam is banged up in some fashion or is at least going to miss this week, which is, you know, it's Cam Newton, so it's not surprising. But, you know, still it has to be taken into consideration. So, and I think the Bucks are 1-1 because I believe they won last week. So,
they beat Carolina. Yeah.
So, I mean, do we feel like bumping up Atlanta ahead of New Orleans, or do we believe in Teddy Bridgewater?
Yeah, that's interesting. And again, I think that another pick that I think looks pretty good in retrospect, you know, a lot of people, like I know Robert Mays loves the Panthers, but, you know, somebody put it on Twitter. I mean, Cam Newton has taken a far worse beating than Andrew Luck. Like, for some reason, the new rules about hitting quarterbacks just have never applied to Cam. For reasons, you know, I still remember that opening day game in Denver where he took like 4 late hits. You know, it's ridiculous. And Luck retired because of it. So, you know, it was really clear that Cam was far from 100%. And he's also kind of been uneven. And again, I don't think his fault, but I think that he's been so banged up that it's not even clear that you know, he's an elite performer right now. So, you know, particularly given that the other two teams are credible, you know, and I think, you know, and again, I think the Falcons are an example of how we tend to conflate disappointing and bad. That I think the Falcons have somewhat, you know, obviously they just ridiculously blew a Super Bowl. They could have won by kneeling on, you know, like, literally had they just not run any offensive plays, they would have won the Super Bowl. You know, and I don't think Quinn is a great coach, but still, like, Matt Ryan was still one of the, you know, 5 or 6 best quarterbacks in the league. They have one of the 3 best receivers in the league. You know, they have some other, you know, Ridley is very good. You know, so, I mean, I think that, yeah, I like the Saints more. And the Bridgewater, I mean, I'd be interested to know what you guys think. I mean, you know, Bridgewater, I think, was really promising in his first year. Like, he should have been taken much higher in the draft. But, you know, he was a really serious injury. And, you know, he hasn't looked great. You know, he wasn't great in Week 17, albeit without, you know, Cameron. I don't think either Thomas or Kamara played. And he wasn't really great coming in against the Rams either. And, again, that's a good defense coming in cold. But, you know, like, but having said that, I think, you know, I don't know how good he'll be, but he's still better than the typical backup. And the Saints have a lot of talent. They're very well coached. You know, certainly as a Seahawks fan, I'm happy Brees isn't playing, but I don't look at this as, well, no way we can screw this up. You know, like, you know, I think the Saints are still pretty dangerous. So, But I would be inclined, particularly since the Saints lost that game. I think you'd have to put the Falcons a little bit ahead of them. But I see them both as playoff teams. Particularly given that the Panthers don't look like it's going to be their year. And the Bucs are interesting. They'll be at least if you're going to have a not very good team, at least make them fun. And Bruce Arians and Jay, like, that's fun. Like, they'll take shots and they'll be a tough out. But I don't see them, being the other two teams. So, I think that you'd have to rank Atlanta marginally ahead. But having said that, I wouldn't be surprised if Teddy puts in some good weeks. And I think that the Saints will be right there too. I would expect both those teams to make the playoffs.
Yeah, I think I'd feel pretty, maybe a little more confident in going to the Falcons, mostly because I don't think this division is really very good at this point. I Cam may be getting close to finished. Carolina is not good. I think that the one real concern about the Falcons is that Devontae Freeman looks terrible in the first 2 weeks. But of course, you can always find another running back. I mean, right? That's the score of the NFL, so maybe that's not such a big deal. I was a big Bridgewater fan as well when he started, but he hasn't looked good in the games he's played. He didn't look good last week. Kamara and Thomas, they have some, their top end talent is really, really good, but they've also given up a lot of points in the first 2 weeks. And so I don't know. I'm probably a little more skeptical about the Saints than you are. I mean, if they can go 3-3 in the next 6 weeks and Breeze comes back and is good. But, Breeze was also – the second half of last year, Breeze was pretty crappy. I mean, the statistical fall-off between the first eight between the first eight games and the second half of the season for Breeze was very significant. So, I think there's a lot of unknowns about the Saints. The Bucs, the thing about the Bucs is, Jameis is a mess. And, Tampa, I don't know what they're going to do because you almost can't re-sign him at the end of the year because for the behavioral issues on top of the mediocrity and the massive numbers of turnovers. But I don't know where they really go from here either. So, especially if they win enough games, if they end up with the 12th pick in the draft, and what are they going to, and then you end up either trading your whole franchise to, go draft Justin Herbert, which even though I'm an Oregon fan, he is to me the prototypical, hey, that guy's tall and white and with a big arm, clearly he's going to be NFL material where, it doesn't really show up on the field that much. You take a mediocre, you reach for a more mediocre player than that. So to me, the Bucs are a little bit screwed, but yeah, I guess they are going to be fun. But I, to me, this division is actually kind of trending downward.
And it's really fascinating that here's sort of the really super hot take, right? Is that, we're coming down to a situation this year where it's going to be, we could have 1-2 pick like Herbert and Tua, right?
Right.
It's just going to and it's especially fascinating because it's like going to be in the years that Winston and Mariota, they have to make the decisions whether to renew the contracts, right? And so it's like how the NFL thinks about quarterbacks in a microcosm, right? I don't think either Tennessee or Tampa Bay are going to be in a position to take either Tua or Herbert, but it's still very interesting.
And I need to go back to Helfrich for a second here. Mm. How bad is Mark Helfrich? Tua wanted nothing more than to go to Oregon. He's from Hawaii. Mariota was his hero. He was tweeting about how much he wanted to go to Oregon, and Oregon would not offer him a scholarship because Helfrich had his mind on some other quarterback that Oregon did not get. And so by the time at the end of his junior year, he had so alienated the Tua's family that Oregon was out. And, of course, then he goes to his backup school of Alabama. This is Mark Helfrich for you. So I just – and I think it'd be ironic if the Bears are just an awful team, and ended up with one of those picks and, Trubisky's gone and, it ends up being like Tua or Herbert who Helfrich simply stumbled upon as a local three-star quarterback. So,
The good news for you is that it happens. Like, there's so many teams that can't. The Bears are not going to – no way they're going to get below the Dolphins and Giants and Jets. Yeah, that's the one.
I know that's true, but I'm just – I'm just saying.
Right. Yeah. All right, so let's go with the final division here, which I know is nearest and dearest to both of your hearts, the NFC West, where, Scott, you have the Rams, the Seahawks, the 49ers, and the Arizona Cardinals, who are another one of those tanky teams but will not be in the market for a quarterback next year.
Yeah, well, Eric, I'm sure you feel great after 2 weeks of, thoroughly convincing victories against strong teams at the height of their powers, you know, no, absolutely no issues going forward, you know, but yeah, I mean, obviously I'm not that, you know, I mean, you know, the Seahawks throughout the Pete Carroll era have had sort of grinded out a lot of ugly wins where they sort of grudgingly allow Russell Wilson to make exactly as many plays as he needs to make the, you know, and, you know, even with Roethlisberger hurt, you know, to going into Pittsburgh and winning, you know, I don't think you can really look badly on that. The Bengals game is pretty ugly. And, you know, I obviously have some concerns about Schottenheimer's offense. Although one thing, Metcalf is actually, which is one of my biggest concerns, is actually look good, which they really need a second receiver. But the other thing about, which is an amazing thing to say about a Pete Carroll team, is that the secondary is really, I mean, that John Ross touchdown in week one was just like, you might as well just take like Earl Thomas's jersey and piss on it on the 50-yard line. Like that was just like the worst, like, my God. You know, like that's just, you know, it's really, you know, and I think that, you know, I think that the Seahawks have benefited to some degree from the assumption that Pete Carroll can coach almost anybody into a functional defensive back. So when it's like, you know, do you want to pay Byron Maxwell or do you want to let Chip play Byron Maxwell? Then yes, let him go. But I think that's diluted them into, you know, we won't miss Earl Thomas, which is a very different kettle of, you know, like I think Carroll can turn anybody into an okay defensive back. He can't make anybody Earl Thomas. And we now know that it wasn't about Thomas needing to play in Texas. So I don't really understand why they alienated him and let him walk away when he's still really good and they clearly don't have anybody who can replace him. And Carroll's defense without a good free safety is can be thrown on. So, you know, I like the defensive front seven. So I would still say that, you know, I think that the Seahawks are ahead of where they expect them to be in kind of year two of a rebuild. But they're pretty distinctly below the Rams, and you know I would certainly say I'd probably put them below the Eagles and Cal. Like I sort of think they're at the top of the second tier of the conference rather than a real contender. But I don't know if you're more optimistic than I am about that.
Well, I'm not concerned about the tight ugly wins because it's the Seahawks and this happened in their Super Bowl year. I mean, it's infuriating. And of course, this was back in the days when, you know, the Jeff Fisher Rams, if you recall, right. They have to go 14-2 and then lose like three, you know, 2 5-3 games to the Rams, right? You know, eight straight times. I mean, it was, you know, there's always these games. So I'm kind of whatever about that. I mean, yeah, the defense is certainly concerning. I do think, though, one thing, to kind of go back to last week's discussion about competent franchises, is that, you know, this is the Seahawks in a rebuild mode, right? Yeah. And last year they were supposed to be, I thought they were going to be pretty bad, actually, and they end up making the playoffs and probably would have won a playoff game had they had a kicker. And which you should
have said. Or a competent defensive coordinator.
Seahawks 2 years in a row, right? First with Walsh and then with Jack, you know, with a, you know, 79-year-old so you know, if this is the rebuild versus 20 other teams in the NFL going through a rebuild over time and having like 5 straight 3-win seasons, you have to really respect what Carroll and Schneider can do. Even if I think the whole idea of, you know, John Schneider draft genius was massively overrated because he got really lucky in 2 straight drafts and then had like 5 terrible ones in a row, you know, which I'll be able to kind of balance it all out. But you know, this is, you know, so long as they have Russell Wilson and this management team, they're going to be competitive no matter what. And Wilson has looked amazing so far. So,
yeah, I mean, go ahead.
But no, I feel pretty good. But you know, this is looking like potentially, you know, has a shot at minus the Cardinals as being the best division in the NFL.
Yeah, yeah. Well, lots like this, you know, and I think that talking about windows closing after the we need you boom is like if you have a coach and a quarterback and a general manager, like you could be competitive. Those are the three things you need, and Seattle has them. But of course, the Rams also, you know, and Goff is not as good as Wilson. But, you know, the Rams have more surrounding talent and certainly better offensive coaching. Like, that's never been Carroll's, you know, it's actually kind of frightening to think of what McVay would do with Russell Wilson. but, yeah, I think that, you know, but I think the Rams look as good as advertised. And they're definitely, you know, I think that they're going to start facing the same kind of cap and aging issues that the Legion of Boom did. But I still think they're really, you know, I would pick them to come out of the conference right now. But I think the one thing is that I would say the 49ers definitely look better than I expected. And again, there's some opposition issues there, but like Garoppolo, and the thing is they've looked pretty good without Garoppolo being great. Right. So I think they look like they're finally arriving. And the Cardinals are not good, but they're at least a little like Murray can clearly play. So I think that they're not going to be as embarrassing as they were last year. You know, and they actually hung in. I forget who are they playing. They're playing the Ravens last week, right? And they actually hung in. Yeah. Pretty well in that game, you know, and that, which I think is encouraging, because that's the kind of game against, you know, tough defense that a team like the Dolphins, that is just not going to be competitive. So like they look like they're probably not going to be good this year, but they're going to be frisky. And as Rob, as you say, because they have a quarterback, they don't need to tank. They're in a position where like they're fine going 5-11. So they're going to be playing.
You know, same thing last year, right? I mean, last year you said, well, you know, I mean, heck, they drafted a quarterback in the first round. Why would they need another one? But, and then it turned out.
Rosen, I think the question with the Cardinals is, you know, did they make the right move going with two straight quarterbacks? You know, was it better just to cut bait on Rosen? And while I think probably it was true, because I don't think Rosen's very good. And it's going to be even harder to evaluate him with starting for Miami this week. I mean, what is he even going to do, even if he was good in that scenario? He's probably just going to be ruined by playing behind the worst team in arguably NFL history. So I don't want to totally damn the guy, but he didn't look great last year when he played. And Murray might be good. It's a little hard to say, but he's looked competitive. So, I think they're a franchise that at least it has a glimmer of hope, unlike 7 or 8 other franchises. So.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think that the one thing I'll say about them is that you do have to accept the fallacy of sunk cost. I mean, the reason the Seahawks won a Super Bowl is that, you know, they didn't let a lot of teams would have said, well, we've signed Matt Flynn, you know, that's it. You know, they're like, well, Russell Wilson's available, we'll take him. You know, like he's not our top priority. But if the Jags want to draft a punter, like we'll take him. You know, that's, you know, and then as soon as he appeared in camp, it was pretty clear. And I think I'd say that, like, you know, and I think it's Rosen has really gotten a raw deal. I mean, I agree with Eric that he's been put in two coaching and talent contexts in which like Tom Brady would look awful. Like he just, you know, it's really unfortunate for him. But if you think, you know, but the fact is, Kyler Murray played in the same system Mahomes did and put up numbers that are pretty comparable. And, you know, I think that that's where Mahomes probably has a higher upside. But, Murray has, like, I think even a big Rosen fan would say that he had the upside of being like a competent plus quarterback. Whereas I think Murray is a little up in the air, but I think he is somebody who could be a star. Like, he has. His performance and his skills suggest that like he could be really, really good. And so I think that if you have the pick and you know you think that a genuine potential star is out there and you don't think Rosen has that potential, and I would be inclined to think that he doesn't, I think you have to make the move and not worry about how you blew the pick last year. Like I think the most important thing is, you know, and I would say through week two, it looks pretty, you know, and again, through about 3 weeks of the first game, I'd be like, I don't know with this, but you know, Murray had a really impressive comeback in the fourth quarter. Granted that, you know, and by the way, talking about unholy coaching combinations, Matt Patricia and Daryl Bevel. Well, inside slant to Ricardo Lockett. I think that, you know, and again, played, you know, very competitively in a tough situation in Baltimore. So, you know, I think they did the right thing there. You know, I think it's unfortunate for Rosen, but I think you have to, with the talent like that, I think you had to take him. And I would say nothing we've seen so far, I think, would lead you to question that judgment.
And the other thing I would add about this division is that, you know, I don't want to say I'm a believer in the Niners, but, you know, they're averaging almost 5 yards a carry. They have, you know, George Kittle's rapidly becoming the best tight end in the game. They have an excellent pass rush. There's a lot to like about that team all of a sudden. And, I think that they could be potentially one of the surprises of the NFL this year.
Yeah, I think it's one of those where they were expected to be good last year. And with the Garoppolo injury and just didn't really take off for them. So I think some people forgot them. Now, it should be said that they played the Buccaneers and the Bengals.
Yes.
So that's a little bit careful. But, you know, having said that, you know, the Seahawks, you know, and I would say that the opening game wasn't quite as close as it looked. Like, obviously, they need a couple of fluky plays. But it says something about the 49ers that they blew the Bengals out. You know, I mean, I think that's, you know, and so that's the situation.
And, well, and the Buccaneers are a 1-1 team.
Both of those Niners games are on the road.
Yeah, right. That's which is impressive. And, you know, the Buccaneers are not terrible, you know, they're, you know, and they did beat Carolina in Carolina the next week. Actually, like, I think that the Steelers 49ers, you know, in the next 3 weeks, the 49ers play the Steelers, Browns and Rams. So I think that's going to be a very interesting, you know, but you have to think that the Steelers at home are going to be winnable. And then Rudolph actually looked okay. But yeah, I mean, I think that's a good time to get in the Steelers. But those Browns and Rams games, I think, will be really interesting. And I think after week five, you know, we'll know. And then if they can get through that, even 3-2, they get the Washington Football Club, the probably Camless Panthers and the Cardinals. So the Seahawks and 49ers don't play until November. So I think it's going to be interesting, but certainly they look, the 49ers, I would say, look very competitive.
The other thing about looking at the schedule, the back end of that Niners schedule is brutal. Absolutely brutal.
Oh yeah. To look at the same. Yeah. Raven. Well, yeah.
It's,
geez,
like, last, yeah, and it's basically starting with the Packers. It's Packers, Ravens, Saints, Falcons, Rams, Seahawks. So yeah, they can start off pretty good and end up, you know, with a 1-5 end or something.
Yeah. And then that's a, and of course the Seahawks are lucky in that they're going to get the Saints without Breeze and probably the 49ers won't. But, yep, you know, having said that, if I'm a 49ers fan, if they go 8-8 this year and look good against a tough schedule, like, I'll sign for that. You know, like, I don't think anybody would expect them to be, you know, like a contender this year. So, you know, if they go 8-8 or 9-7 against the schedule, you know, I'd say that, you know, keep Garoppolo, you know, Garoppolo looks pretty good, plays all 16 games. Like, I'd consider that a success. And again, from the standpoint of the top of the division, there's certainly going to be a tough game. You know, you're not going to look at the 49, you know, and I think that, you know, that they're certainly not a soft touch. By any means. So I think it's actually pretty interesting. And really, the whole division is a lot better because it was just amazing how quickly this division collapsed after the 49ers fired Harbaugh. But it really does seem to be coming back. You know, the Cardinals, you can at least see some light at the end of the tunnel there. And I think the other three teams look pretty good. And again, I still think that the Rams, you know, how would you two rank the conference? I think I would put the Rams top and then sort of, you know, Eagles, Cowboys, and then sort of whatever your North team of choice.
Yeah, probably the Packers would, I would come after that or have that there in the mix.
Yeah, with the Saints long in the mix there too, depending on Breeze. But
I might put the Seahawks fourth, actually, mostly because I don't believe in any of these other teams outside of the Rams, who so far at number one, and then probably the Cowboys and Eagles.
Yeah, and I think that the optimistic take on the Seahawks is that, you know, Wilson, you know, assuming that Metcalf can be good, you know, they have a good running, you know, they have the best pass rush they've had in a long time. And, you know, hopefully the secondary will improve. You know, certainly Carroll's history is to coach up the secondary, and it's not going to be a really good secondary. You know, it should be, you know, but hopefully it'll get a little better. We don't have the cap room to trade for Jalen Ramsey, do we? That'll look pretty good. But
Lawyers, Guns, and Money does not have the cap room to put to trade for Jalen.
I would certainly start a GoFundMe for that. But
all right. Well, we have gone, I think, for our full time here. So thank you, gentlemen.
Plus, there's a hot Jags Titans game about to start. I got to see that.
Oh, that's right. Speaking of,
is that one actually? Because I don't have any sort of cable anymore. Right. So is this one I'm going to have to watch, like the post fight stills? Is it on like NBC network or something like that?
I think it's on NFL Network, but I think it's more likely that all game footage of this will probably be burned for just being careful.
We will talk more about this in the future, and we'll come back and we'll have more of these football podcasts because I certainly enjoy doing them. So, gentlemen, thank you so much.
Excellent.
Yeah, thank you, Matt.
Lawyers, Guns, and Money's listeners, thank you as well, and we will talk to you soon.
Thank you again for listening to the Lawyers, Guns, and Money podcast. We would like to thank Elizabeth Nelson of The Paranoid Style for supplying the music necessary to make this podcast possible. You can find this track and the rest of The Paranoid Style's catalog anywhere you can find good music. If you would like to support the Lawyers, Guns, and Money podcast or any other aspect of the Lawyers, Guns, and Money project, please visit us at www.patreon.com/lawyersgunsandmoney or donate through a PayPal link on the main website. Thank you again.